1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 1. Now it fell upon a day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said unto the young man that bore his armor, "Come, let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on yonder side." But he told not his father. Jonathan had already attacked one of their garrisons successfully, and his father, Saul, took the credit for it. Jonathan doesn't care about that because he himself, he is a true man of God. He has more faith than his father does, and he only cares about pleasing the Lord. He doesn't care if he gets credit or not for things. But because they had that first success, now Jonathan wants to attack another garrison of the Philistines, and he has his trusty right-hand man with him. 2. And Saul tarried in the uttermost part of Gibeah under the pomegranate tree, which is in Migron, and the people that were with him were about 600 men. His father Saul is relaxing under a pomegranate tree where he can get some food. Saul is being kind of lazy, but his son Jonathan is in the fight. 3. And Abijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the priest of the Lord in Shiloh, wearing an ephod, was with Saul. Remember when Eli's family was cursed and cut off, several generations passed by. Ichabod was the one who was born and his mother died during childbirth because his father Phinehas and his grandfather Eli were both dead. But now a few generations have gone by, and Ichabod's grandson, Ahijah, is now wearing the priest's ephod. But Ahijah is working for Saul, so he's not going to have a long-standing legacy. But later on, another generation to come, when we get to Zadok, Zadok will serve King David and King Solomon. Zadok will be the first priest that really brings the priesthood back. And the people knew not that Jonathan was gone. 4. And between the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over unto the Philistines' garrison, there was a rocky crag on one side, and another rocky crag on the other side. And the name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other Sene. There's two rocky crags in between where the garrison is that you could climb up like a billy goat and see the garrison. Bozez means a shining, glittering height. That must be where the sun shines at a certain point of the day. And Sene means bramble or enemy. So it's a crag that leads to his enemy, the Philistines. And there could also be brambles along that rocky crag. Saul doesn't realize that Jonathan is still fighting and that Jonathan isn't with him. But Saul does have his other 600 men with him who didn't run. 5. The one crag rose up on the north in front of Michmas, and the other on the south in front of Geba. There's one crag on the north and one on the south. 6. And Jonathan said to the young man that bore his armor, "Come and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised." Now that would be the pagans. They're not circumcised physically or spiritually. They don't follow the commandments of the Lord. "It may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few." Jonathan says to his servant who carries his armor. That would be his armor bearer, which is the same thing as a squire. He says, "Even though there's only two of us, we can win with the Lord on our side." That is full 100% faith, and that's absolutely true. You don't need an army when God is on your side. He's your army. 7. And his armor bearer said unto him, "Do all that is in thy heart, turn thee. Behold, I am with thee according to thy heart." His armor bearer is also a man of faith. And he says, "If you believe, I believe. I'm 100% with you." 8. Then said Jonathan, "Behold, we will pass over unto the men, and we will disclose ourselves unto them." Jonathan is saying, "We're going to reveal ourselves to the Philistines." 9. "If they say unto us, 'Tarry until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place and will not go up unto them." That means that if the Philistines say, "We'll fight you in a little bit, just wait there," then that means that God isn't with them, so they're not going to fight the Philistines at all. 10. "But if they say thus, 'Come up unto us,' then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hand, and this shall be the sign unto us." Jonathan says, "If they challenge us immediately to a fight and they tell us to come up and fight them, then we know that the Lord is with us and we're going to take them down." 11. "And both of them disclosed themselves unto the garrison of the Philistines," meaning that they showed themselves out in the open and made it known that they were there. Maybe they were standing in the sunshine on the one shiny crag. Who knows? And the Philistines said, behold, Hebrews coming forth out of the holes where they hid themselves. They're saying, look, they came out of their caves. 12, and the men of the garrison spoke to Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, come up to us and we will show you a thing. They're saying, come on up, little boys, we're going to kill you. And Jonathan said unto his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. Jonathan has his sign from the Lord that God is with them and they're going to win. When God tells you he's with you, don't be afraid of anything. Just go for it. 13, and Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet. They have to climb a crag. It's like they're eating dirt all the way up. And his armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer slew them after him. Now this is amazing, because if you are climbing up a steep crag to get to soldiers who are already standing on solid ground, and they're towering above you with all of their armor and their swords, and you don't even have your sword in your hand because you're using your hands and your feet just to climb, you're at a huge disadvantage. But because Jonathan knows that the Lord is going before him and fighting the battle, he doesn't need to worry about that. This is a miraculous victory, because two men who had to climb up and had their hands and feet busy climbing the whole way to get up there were still able to overtake all of these big fat Philistines. Jonathan was killing people ahead of his servant, and whoever he didn't kill, his servant killed behind him. 14, and that first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men, within, as it were, half a furrow's length in an acre of land. They killed 20 men in that small plot of land, which means they killed about 10 each. 15, and there was a trembling in the camp in the field, and among all the people, the garrison and the spoilers, they also trembled. The spoilers are the ones who rob the Israelites of their wealth after each battle. And they're so afraid that the earth is actually shaking, because they're seeing, if these two people who had to crawl up on their hands and feet have just killed 20 men in a matter of minutes, we're in big trouble. And the earth quaked, so it grew into a terror from God. And I'm sure God is allowing there to be a little earthquake as a sign to the Philistines that they're in big trouble. 15, and the watchmen of Saul and Gibeath Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went hither and thither. The watchmen where Saul are, near the pomegranate tree, they can see the Philistines running. 17, then said Saul unto the people that were with him, number now and see who is gone from us. Saul knows that some Israelite is fighting. And when they had numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. This is when Saul first realizes that his son is winning another battle. 18, and Saul said unto Ahijah, bring hither the ark of God, for the ark of God was there at that time with the children of Israel. They love to have the ark with them when they fight in battles, because that's how they win, is only when God is with them. And you and I need to remember that. We won't win any battle in life unless God is with us. And I'm not talking about temporal battles, like getting the job, getting married, getting famous. I'm not talking about earthly, trivial things. I'm talking about the spiritual battles in life, where we need faith and we need to believe and we need healing, deliverance, wholeness, and salvation for our family. Those are the battles where God is with us. 19, and it came to pass, while Saul talked unto the priest, that the tumult that was in the camp of the Philistines went on and increased. Even while Saul is talking to Ahijah the priest, the Philistines are starting to scream, and the Israelites can hear it. And Saul said unto the priest, withdraw thy hand. Saul was telling the priest, stop asking God if we should fight. I already know that we should fight, because I can see the Philistines running, which means surely God is on our side. 20, and Saul and all the people that were with him were gathered together and came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was a great discomfiture. That means the Philistines are so afraid that they're killing each other. And this has happened before, where God has put such terror in the camp of the pagans that they actually start killing each other. 21, now the Hebrews that were with the Philistines as before time, and that went up with them into the camp round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan, the traitor Israelites who had fought with the Philistines because they were more afraid of the Philistines than they were of God. Now they've decided not to be traitors anymore, and they're joining the Israelites because they see the Israelites are going to win. But you know, that's not very noble. They have no faith. They're just going with whatever side they think is winning. And that is not nobility at all. But at least they're on the correct side now. 22, likewise all the men of Israel that had hid themselves in the hill country of Ephraim, that means in the caves, when they heard that the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after them in battle. Rumors travel very quickly, and it didn't take long for everybody to hear and see that the Philistines were running. So the Israelites are coming out of the woodwork at this point because they believe with all their heart that God has given them the battle, and he has. 23. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed on as far as Beth Avon, which is a town. 24. And the men of Israel were distressed that day. Now, they weren't distressed because they were losing. They were distressed because they were tired and hungry after the great fight. But Saul said, "Cursed be the man that eateth any food until it be evening, and I be avenged on mine enemies." So none of the people tasted food. Remember, it had been prophesied that Saul would be a very hard king, and here's another example of how hard he is. Previously, he had threatened the people, saying, "If you don't fight with me, I'm going to cut up all your oxen." And now he's telling them, even though he knows that they're hungry, he says, "If you eat before the sun goes down, before all of the Philistines are dead, then you will be cursed." That's really cruel. There's no reason for him to say that. They deserve to eat so that they can keep fighting, but he won't let them eat. 25. And all the people came into the forest, and there was honey upon the ground. Honey was dripping down from the bees' nests, or there were bees' nests that were low on the ground. 26. And when the people were come into the forest, behold, a flow of honey, but no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. Nobody grabbed a honeycomb and put it in his mouth. 27. But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Because remember, Jonathan was over above the crags fighting. He was the one who began the battle, so he didn't know what his father had told everybody. And he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand, and dipped it in the honeycomb, and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes brightened. That means that his strength came back to him, because he was so dehydrated and tired and hungry that he was probably seeing stars. You know how when your blood sugar is low and you see stars? But then when he ate the honey, he could see better. 28. Then answered one of the people and said, "Thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, Cursed be the man that eateth food this day, and the people are faint." Somebody told Jonathan, "Hey, your father said that we can't eat, but you just ate." 29. Then said Jonathan, "My father hath troubled the land." This is true. Saul is just causing his own people trouble. He's an arrogant person. All he's doing is making them hungry. He's not helping them win. He's actually slowing them down. This is the same arrogancy we saw with Pharaoh, who told the Israelites, "From now on, we won't give you hay, but you still have to make the same amount of bricks." When you give people less, you get less. And Saul has told the people they can't eat, but he still expects them to fight and win. Jonathan has more common sense. So he says, "I pray you, how mine eyes are brightened because I tasted a little of this honey." 30. How much more if happily the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found, had there not been then a much greater slaughter among the Philistines? And Jonathan is right. He's saying, if my father had allowed the people to eat the spoil as they went, they could have killed a lot more Philistines. 31. And they smote of the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very faint. This is kind of like when Samson had killed 1,000 men in one day with the donkey's jaw, and at the end of the day, he was almost dead from lack of water and lack of food. Well, that's how these people feel now. 32. And the people flew upon the spoil and took sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground, and the people did eat them with the blood. This means that the people were so famished, they couldn't wait to properly slaughter and cook the food. They didn't slit the lamb's throats. They just hacked them up and started eating. I don't know if they ate them raw or if they partially cooked them. Now Saul has caused his people to disobey a commandment of the Lord because they were going to die. 33. Then they told Saul, saying, "Behold, the people sin against the Lord because they didn't slit the animal's throat, drain the blood out, and that they eat with the blood." And he said, "Ye have dealt treacherously. Roll a great stone unto me this day." Saul is blaming the people for their sin. He should be blaming himself. And this is another thing that narcissists do. They set up rules that glorify themselves while hurting others. Then the narcissist blames those victims. 34. And Saul said, Disperse yourselves among the people, and say unto them, Bring me hither every man his ox, and every man his sheep, and slay them here, and eat, and sin not against the Lord in eating with the blood. And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night, and slew them there. Saul put an end to their eating temporarily and said, Everybody stop eating, bring me the animals that you took from the enemy, and we'll do the proper sacrifice, and then we'll eat. 35, and Saul built an altar unto the Lord. The same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. Saul has won two battles, and he's been anointed king, and now he finally builds an altar to the Lord. Most men in the Bible will build the Lord an altar even before they have a great victory, and certainly with their first victory. 36, and Saul said, Let us go down after the Philistines by night and spoil them until the morning light, and let us not leave a man of them. And they said, Do whatsoever seemeth good unto thee. Then said the priest, Let us draw near hither unto God. Saul says, Let's go take all the spoil we can, and we're going to kill every Philistine that we find. Saul, instead of asking the Lord, he is deciding on his own what they're going to do. And he is deciding on his own that they'll kill all the men and take spoil. But he hasn't asked God. And then the priest Ahijah says, Let's ask God. Good advice. 37. And Saul asked counsel of God, Shall I go down after the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel? But he answered him not that day. God didn't give Saul an answer. 38, and Saul said, Draw nigh hither, all ye chiefs of the people, and know and see wherein this sin hath been this day. 39, for as the Lord liveth, who saveth Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die. But there was not a man among all the people that answered him. Even though everyone knew that Jonathan had eaten the honey, nobody wanted to say so, because they loved him. 40, then said he unto all Israel, Be ye on one side, and I and Jonathan my son will be on the other side. And the people said unto Saul, Do what seemeth good unto thee. That way the Lord can pick who has sinned. It's either going to be the people, or it's going to be Saul and his family. 41, therefore Saul said unto the Lord, the God of Israel, Declare the right. And Jonathan and Saul were taken by lot, but the people escaped. 42, and Saul said, Cast lots between me and Jonathan, my son, and Jonathan was taken. They are using lots to get the answer from the Lord. And the Lord has said that Jonathan is the one who sinned. But remember, Jonathan didn't know. Jonathan committed a trespass. That's when you commit a sin without knowing it. It is possible to commit a sin without knowing it, especially if you've never been taught God's laws. But in this case, Jonathan didn't know it because he didn't hear what his father had said not to eat food. 43, then Saul said to Jonathan, Tell me what thou hast done. And Jonathan told him and said, I did certainly taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in my hand. Here am I will die. Jonathan said, Okay, I'm ready to die. You said I would die, I'm ready. 44, and Saul said, God do so and more also. Thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. 45, and the people said unto Saul, Shall Jonathan die who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? Far from it, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day. So the people rescued Jonathan, that he died not. They actually saved Jonathan. They didn't agree with what his father had said, because his father tried to starve everybody, and Jonathan didn't even know what his father had said. So this is kind of a rebellion. And it's because the king is so hard that the people don't want to follow him 100%. 46, then Saul went up from following the Philistines, and the Philistines went to their own place. Saul stopped pursuing the Philistines in battle. Probably the air was blown out of his tires a little bit. And so the Philistines went home, the ones that were left. 47, so Saul took the kingdom over Israel and fought against all his enemies on every side, against Moab and against the children of Ammon and against Edom and against the kings of Zobah and against the Philistines. And whithersoever he turned himself, he put them to the worse. For a while, every battle that Saul fought, he won, even against the Edomites, which are cousins to the Israelites, because they're descendants of Esau. But they're also pagans. The Moabites and the Ammonites are also cousins to the Israelites because they're sons of Lot, but they're also pagans. Saul starts winning battles for a while. 48, and he did valiantly and smote the Amalekites and delivered Israel out of the hands of them that spoiled them. Saul did kill giants, and he delivered the Israelites out of the pagans who were robbing them. 49. Now the sons of Saul were Jonathan and Ishvi and Malchishua. And the names of his two daughters were these, the name of the firstborn, Merab, and the name of the younger, Michal. Michal is a girl's name in the Bible, but it's also the name of an angel, so it just depends on the spelling. So Saul has five children, and Jonathan is his firstborn son. 50. And the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam, the daughter of Ahimaaz, and the name of the captain of his host was Abner, the son of Ner, Saul's uncle. Throughout the Bible, whenever there is a king of Israel, it will always tell you who his chief officers are. So at this point, Ahijah is his high priest, and Abner is the captain of his army. 51. And Kish was the father of Saul, and Ner, the father of Abner, was the son of Abiel. 52. And there was sore war against the Philistines all the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any mighty man or any valiant man, he took him unto him. Meaning, whenever Saul found a great warrior in Israel, he conscribed that man into his army, which was a smart thing to do. And that concludes 1 Samuel chapter 14.